This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses.
Season 17,
Episode 40.
This is Writing Excuses, question and answers about structure with special guest Pung Shepherd.
15 minutes long,
because you're in a hurry.
And we're not that smart.
I'm Mary Robinette.
I'm Dan.
I'm Brandon.
And I'm Howard.
And we have our special guest with us, Pung Shepherd.
Hi, everybody. I'm Pung. I'm very excited to be here.
Remind our listeners a little bit about who you are. You did a wonderful masterclass with us about structure, and we wanted to bring you back to do a Q&A. So can you just remind folks a little bit about who you are?
Sure. I am a novelist. I'm the author of The Book of M and most recently The Cartographers. And I'm very excited to be back because I just love... So we did that whole masterclass about structure, and I had said many times in many of the episodes that I'm such a structure nerd. And I went away and I thought about it, and I wondered, you know, why am I such a structure nerd? And I think that because I'm also a discovery writer, structure is kind of my outline in a way that an outline is an outline for an outliner. And so I depend on it the way that a plotter might depend on an outline.
Yeah,
I loved the structure masterclass. And my only regret is that I came away from it a day later with all kinds of epiphanies about microstructures and ended up deploying brand new techniques that I didn't even have names for through the current project, my current work in progress, as a result of having a podcast conversation where we're all supposedly knowledgeable and stuff. And I just learned things and didn't say any of them into the microphone.
And one of the things that listeners who listen to that podcast might remember is me having a moment where I said, "Ooh, I think you just solved the next novel that I'm working on." And I am pleased to report that is true. And that I did use the calendar structure. I am using the calendar structure that we talked about for the Martian contingency. Now, you might be wondering where these questions are coming from and how you can ask questions on a podcast. And the answer is that we are doing this podcast live in front of the attendees of the Writing Excuses workshop and cruise. And so these are their questions. Dan, what's our first question?
Our first question is very basic, but it's something that a lot of people have. This is a common one. This comes from Corinne Flynn. How can I avoid putting too few or too many plot threads into my story? How do I know when I have the right number of them?
That's a good question. I would advise putting them, I think, in priority order first, because you've got to have one overarching storyline that's going to carry you through. And then there's usually a pretty big B story. And then after that, there's not necessarily a lot of room. I mean, how many plot lines have you had in a...
Well, it depends on the story. The thing that I, because you all know that I talk about the mice quotient incessantly. But the thing that I say is that every mice quotient, like major thread, can make a story, you know, roughly half again as long. But not every plot thread is a major plot thread. So how do you handle it, Brandon?
My last Stormlight book first draft was 520,000 words long. I have a lot of plot threads going on in one of those books. But I would say, early on, practice is just what got me there. And unfortunately, that's the answer to so many things. My first book, that I tried writing when I was a brand new baby writer. I got like 200,000 words in, and I'm like, that feels like an ending, and then just had a fight. didn't resolve very much at all. I'm like, and it's book one. I didn't know I was writing book one, but there it is. Over time, the more I wrote, the more I came to understand what a plot thread requires from me to do it in a way that I find a satisfying narrative. And that's why I can now, decades later, write 400 plus thousand word books with a lot of different plot threads because I know how much they each take.
I just want to double check. Was that 400,000 words in addition to the five secret novels?
So this is the Stormlight book I released before I launched into those.
Okay, great.
Right, yeah. So,
thank you. I just wanted to know where to...
Sounds cooler. Each of the secret novels were between 90 and 110,000. Okay. And I'm sure it's kind of the same with you folks that... as you write, you get a feel for how long a story takes you. Yep. And so you're like, I know that this one's going to be around 100,000 words. And you just launch toward that, whether you have an outline or not, and you are consistently in that same range. Yep. This is an experience thing.
Yeah.
If I'm losing track of the plot threads while I'm writing it, then structure notwithstanding, that's too many plot threads. And maybe I'll get better at it and be able to do more. But for my own part, it's what fits in my head and works for me.
All right. I want to have a follow-up question because something Brandon just said is right in line with another one of our audience questions here. This one comes from Roy Radian. How do you spread the structure of a plot line over several books? How do you know when to split it structurally in order to get the right payoffs? Now, Brandon, you said when you first started, you just kind of stopped when you were done. But how do you know when is the best place? How do you do that now?
Yeah. So I can tell when an author has done this. These days, I don't know if you've had this experience, but it happens more often when the publisher's like, yeah, split this book. And then it's mm-hmm. always unsatisfying. I say always, and
no.
Mary Robinette's like, wait, I may have done it once. But for me, I am always looking at each book needs a satisfying ending, and each section of a book needs something satisfying. And so when I'm building a novel, I'm asking, you know, when I'm building a series, I'm asking, what is the satisfying part of every installment? We've seen a lot of people try to launch in movies recently, big, long series where the first one wasn't satisfying. And this is, I think, a huge misstep and a huge mistake. And a huge mistake I made in that first book that I tried writing where I just kind of ended it. So if we're talking structure, knowing what your book is trying to do, knowing what's going to make a satisfying ending, and that knowing that's your primary job, then you can start saying, all right, these sub-threads I can raise, hang a lantern on the fact that I'm not going to answer them yet. The characters are too inexperienced. And then that will be sort of the passes, the balls I'm throwing myself to catch in a future novel.
So the reason I raised my hand like, wait, was that I Calculating Stars was originally supposed to be one book that we split into two. And the reason that I knew I needed to split it into two was because I was having to jump important emotional beats in order to save them for the second book or second part of the story in ways that were going to be unsatisfying and frustrating.
Yeah, but I should define that better. When it is poorly is when you turn in the book and the publisher splits it.
Yes.
I've split books before as I've been working. I've been like, no, this is a trilogy and expanded them. That works just fine. It's when you turn them in and the publisher's like, nope, too long. Here's the halfway point. Now you've got two books.
Yeah, because when I split mine, as you say, I had to unpack and expand.
The most egregious example I can think of the publisher, quote unquote, splitting a story partway through is the end of the second Hobbit movie, which is named after Smaug. The entire thing is about Smaug. The movie ends 5 minutes before they kill him, which happens in the third movie. It's shockingly incompetent. Here's another question. Once again, talking about subplots and how many plots you have. This is from Sarah Hipple. How do you ensure that smaller plots or smaller POVs don't make the reader lose sight of the main plot or feel like the subplot is an unwanted diversion?
Mm.
That is an excellent question. I would say one quick tip is character attention is something that often directs reader attention. And when the characters care about it, and particularly in books, we can show from their viewpoint how invested they are. And if you can take that character and have them spin it into the larger story in some way, this helps a ton.
Yeah, and they also have to be... I love writing multiple perspectives, and I often end up with far too many. So I do have this problem where I've got like 15 people and I need about four. And I think it really is... As you go back, you can see when you've got too many people, some of them are repeating each other in some way. Like they're both looking at the same thing with the same mindset. And so, you know, you only want that one mindset or from that one perspective, or only that one person has that knowledge. And so that has helped me clean it up to make sure there's no repetition and that everyone has a reason for being there.
I layer it, and I think about it in terms of the impulse purchase on a shopping trip. The shopping trip is the A plot, and the impulse purchase is the C, D, E, whatever plot. But because it is attached to the shopping trip, we haven't lost sight of things.
Let's take another question.
All right. So this one comes from Deidre. What are some strategies or lines of questioning we can use to better align the character goals, the villain goals, and the overall problem of the story?
Well, you know my favorite thing about the mice question. is that it helps you define kind of the process, the types of conflicts that they're doing. And so one of the things about a character goal and the villain goal is that these goals come into conflict. The character has the simplest possible goal. The villain has the simplest possible goal. And then their actions mess each other up.
One of the ways I really like to think about character goals is what makes it unique, and it's usually the why. And so a character and a villain, they both want something, and they both got a cost to not achieving what they want. But it's always the reasoning behind it, like the misbelief they've got about the world or about themselves that is preventing them from easily getting the want and coming into conflict with their opposing party.
Yeah, and on those lines, a lot of times, what the character is doing is revising their own goals as they go through the plot, mature, see what's going on. And in this case, showing the character giving up the want for the need, which is kind of a classic story archetype, you are very easily able to spiral that, you know, into the need is the greater need, the narrative's need, the world's need, and the character then giving up the want becomes a great tie-in to that when you do it right. And it's not, that one isn't that hard if you're looking at the scope and expanding the scope of your story through the middle.
So I want to talk a little bit more about what Howard said of making sure that the different, you know, plots A, B, C, the impulse buys are connected to that central thread. And because of the pop cultural medium we exist in right now, superhero movies are the examples that are leaping to mind. So, for example, Amazing Spider-Man 2 brought in so many villains, and none of them had anything to do with each other. They were people who were causing problems. They each had their own plans, but they were not related to each other in any meaningful way. The story of Electro did not really connect to the story of Green Goblin, et cetera, et cetera. Compare that to The Dark Knight, the Christopher Nolan one, where we have multiple villains, the two main ones being Two-Face and Joker. And in that case, the writers used Two-Face specifically as a linking element between the other stories. Mm-hmm. So the goal of Batman was to get Harvey Dent on his side, and the goal of Joker was to ruin Harvey Dent and turn him into a monster. And so they did the same thing. They had multiple villains in the story, but they were very deeply connected because the goals were so close.
That's a great example.
Hey, writers. Are you thinking about learning a new language? I think exploring the world, experiencing other cultures, and being able to communicate with people outside your everyday experience lets you create richer, better stories. A great way to do that is with Rosetta Stone, a trusted expert for over 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered. They use an immersive technique which leads to fast language acquisition. It's an intuitive process that helps you really learn to speak, listen, and most of all, think in the language you're trying to learn. They also feature true accent speech recognition technology that gives you feedback on your pronunciation. It's like having a voice coach in your home. Learn at home or on the go with a desktop and mobile app that let you download and access lessons even when you're offline. And it's an amazing value. A lifetime membership gives you access to all 25 languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, German, Japanese, and, of course, Korean. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Writing Excuses listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We are going to pause for the book of the week. We are running long for this episode because we've got so many great questions. The book of the week this week is actually my book. Wee-hee! It's called The Spare Man, and it's basically The Thin Man in Space. So if you have not seen the Thin Man movies, they're amazing. But this is a happily married couple, their small dog, solving murder mystery on an interplanetary cruise ship, which is definitely not at all inspired by the boat that I'm on right now. There's a small dog, which lives because I know the rules, banter, cocktail recipes, including zero-proof cocktail recipes, and did I mention murder?
So, But not of a dog.
Not of the dog.
Not of a dog.
And a conference room with really uncomfortable chairs.
Really uncomfortable chairs. So that's The Spare Man, and available from fine bookstores everywhere.
All right. This question is from Dorinda. This is much more of kind of a wide-angle question. Besides studying successful story structures for guidance, are there clear do's and don'ts when it comes to story structure? And I guess the follow-up, what are they?
Two answers. Answer number one, no. Answer number two, answer number two, what works for you and keeps you writing is the right answer.
Yeah. I mean, that's the very, it's the truth, right? You can find an exception to every rule except that rule, right? Now, I can give some pitfalls for me personally, right? Like I can say, hey, here's things that I've run into that my writing style when I find that I've done something wrong. And with me, that is usually comes down to me knowing what needs to happen in the outline. So the characters know what needs to happen in the outline. So the characters do what's in the outline, and that's not properly motivated and or signposted for the reader. And a lot of times what I'm fixing after beta reads is things like this. And I've kind of noticed that that's a thing that sometimes I do. It's very common for outline writers, right? You've got, you know, there's the joke, you see this in criticism of movies where characters do things and the joke is, oh, they had the script, so they knew what they're supposed to do. The characters know what they're supposed to do. They have the outline. That I want to avoid, and I watch out for it.
Can I ask you a question, Brandon?
Yeah.
These days, mm-hmm. How often do you ever get surprised and then deviate from the outline that you've written? Does it ever happen anymore?
So surprise never happened to me. The way that my just psychology works, I'm always searching for the better answer. The outline is a guide to try to get there. That's what past Brandon, the best that past Brandon could do without the experience of having written the book. As I'm writing the book, I'm always saying what can be better. I'm working on the next Stormlight book right now. And I hit a thing where I'm like, this just isn't good enough, right? Mm-hmm. It just isn't good enough. And so I dig back into it and I dig deeper and I'm like, let's try something else. That happens a ton. It's not that I get surprised. It's more that I get disappointed. I'm like, no, I need more. And then I dig. Once in a while, I'm like, oh, this is a better connection. But I don't even see it as a surprise. I see it as current Brandon can take what past Brandon did, but has more experience now, is older and wiser by a few weeks, and can now change that up and go forward with something new that is going to work better.
I do have an example. This was a question for Brandon. I'm going to answer it. I do have an example of something that surprised me. Mm-hmm. And this was a book, a horror novel that I wrote a couple years ago, which none of you have read because of this thing I'm about to tell you. I realized at some point in chapter 4, 5, 6, whatever it was, that it would be a much stronger story if abruptly the monster ate the love interest. And on the one hand, I was right. It was way better. It was much more interesting to turn that obvious love interest into a red herring, and then he gets eaten, and then we move on. The problem that I had not properly dealt with at the time was, well, what do I do about my ending now? Because the love interest was part of the thread that was going to lead there, and I didn't take the time to properly recalibrate the trajectory of the story to account for his absence, which left a very unsatisfying ending, even though he wasn't in 80% of the book.
I got an answer for you after the podcast. It might be too spoilery.
Well, I'm excited.
I've seen this happen really well, and so I want okay. to say, ooh, have you thought of this?
Mm-hmm. All right. I have one more question, okay? And this one was written to me about a role-playing game that I ran earlier on the cruise, but I think we can apply it more widely. It says, Dan Wells, after playing in one of your homebrew games, I was intrigued on how you prep or color code the different pieces of the game. This is something that I do when I run games in person, is in order to streamline certain things, I take a lot of the rules of games and a lot of the elements of character and I put them onto cards so I can just pass them out. And then that makes decision making much easier and we get into the story much more quickly. But if we can put that into a broader question, what methods of assembling structure do you use? I've seen people on this cruise arranging post-it notes in different orders. Mary Robinette, I know you do 3x5 cards that you can shuffle physically. Different people use different methods of organizing the tools they have so that they can see the story.
So I am going to mention, because I can't remember if I mentioned this on the podcast before, with the 3x5 cards and the spare man, I laid them out based on plot thread elements that I needed to include. I was rejiggering because I had made a change about who the villain was going to be. And then my cats ran across the note cards. And I looked at it and was like, that's actually a better sequence. So technically part of this book is plotted by cat, which I highly recommend as a plotting method.
See, I was going to say the opposite because I'm very visual and I like to be able to see the plot visually. And I started with note cards and I also have a cat, but it didn't go that way. It did not. So now I use Scrivener. And I think it feels to me like the same thing because you can drag note cards around on the screen and my cat can't type. So it really works for me.
Yet.
Can't yet. Type well.
Yet. Oh, I want to, yeah. My cat walked across my laptop when I was working on the Wheel of Time and I kept the letter E. So my cat typed one letter in the Wheel of Time. When you're reading those books, you can know that it was partially cat produced.
That's so what you're learning here, dear listeners, is that if you want to be successful, you do need a cat.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Preferably multiples who are trained as well as your cats.
Yes.
I use a Word document, even still. just a single document that is my outline that I have built using my tools for outlining. And no note cards, no fancy Scriveners, even though I've had a lot of people tell me that I should move to Scrivener. And I believe them. I'm just, you know, old and stubborn.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody's looking at me like I have a solution here. I love the cat thing because that's how natural selection and evolution work, is the random introduction of mutations. And if it's a mutation that is successful, then we keep it. So go team random cat.
Yeah. Well, as Elsie would say, we are all done. So if I can get a homework assignment.
Yes. Your homework for today is to try writing a piece of fiction outside your usual length. So if you're a novelist, try to write a microfiction story. If you're a short story writer, try to write a chapter or two of a novel, something that doesn't, you know, end. It's long. And see how the size of the idea and the length of the story influences how you end up structuring that exercise.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right. And thank you to our lovely live audience for your questions. You are out of excuses. Now go write.
Writing Excuses is a Dragonsteel production, jointly hosted by Brandon Sanderson, Dan Wells, Mary Robinette Kowal, and Howard Taylor. This episode was mastered by Alex Jackson.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.